Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Failing to plan is planning to fail, especially when it comes to finances. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is November 13th, 2013. And we are beginning a two-day finance article that you can find on pages 24 and 25 in your advanced magazine, Sound Financial Planning. And I had said at the top of the program that failing to plan is planning to fail, and you really need to get started early as far as planning on things such as having children, buying a house, and even looking forward to your retirement later in life. So a lot of times people put this stuff off and then, boom, they are surprised when trouble hits and they're trying to figure out where's the money going to come from. So we're going to talk about making proper plans early in life, getting a good start. And I've got two panelists here in the studio with me today. First, off to my left, Campbell Chong. Hi, Campbell.
Hi, Bill.
Good to have you here, Campbell. And it is appropriate that we have Campbell here with us because he is in the midst of all of this because Campbell's got a little girl and is living this all right now, right?
That's right. We have a young family. Our girl is two years old and above. And she, yeah, so a lot of this that we're going to be talking about today is very appropriate to us right now.
Yeah. And I don't think you're never really fully ready to have a child.
For sure. I don't think it's something that you can ever fully prepare for because it's not something you've ever done. You can read books, but, you know, that's all someone else's experience.
Yeah, and that's just in the time and the energy and all of the things that you have to do to take care of a child. But then you also throw in the finances, and I think it's something that people really underestimate the cost.
For sure. Yeah, there's a lot of things that you don't think about, you know, before you have a kid. And when the kid comes, then you realize, wow, there's a lot of money that you have to spend.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Also here in the studio is Simon Stops. Hi, Simon.
Hey, Bill. It's good to be back.
Good to have you here on the program. And I know, Simon, you pay a lot of attention to ideas that all revolve around as far as money and planning and things like that for the future.
It is a topic of interest to me, yeah. So I'm looking forward to discussing it.
Yeah. What do you see as maybe the biggest problem for people, especially people, I would say, in their 20s and 30s?
I think for the most part, the problem is that people don't start planning early enough.
Okay. When should they start?
As soon as possible.
15, maybe. Maybe even younger.
Well, the earlier you start, the earlier it is to do.
Yeah.
Or easier it is to do, not earlier.
Yeah. I actually think it would be a really good thing to start having classes in school teaching people how to do financial planning.
Yeah. I think I've read some articles about that, and it would be very, very helpful to have classes in high school or even junior high school. Mm-hmm. Just introducing the idea of proper handling of money, because a lot of times a lot of kids grow up thinking money grows on trees, and they just have, you know, we think that, well, we can just ask mom and dad when we get in trouble, when we need money. And unfortunately, some young teenagers never grow out of that. Even in their adult years, they still think, well, I can just ask mom and dad for money when I need it. And so maybe teaching that at an early age, junior high school or high school, would be a good idea as far as managing money, earning money, and understanding the real value of it.
Sure, yeah. Definitely.
So, all right, let's do this. We will take our reading today and break it up into three sections. So we'll have our first reading right now.
Sound financial planning. It's never too early to prepare financially for your family. Planning for a child is a financial mind-bender because there are so many unknowns, ranging from the baby's health to future needs and interests that the child might develop later in life. A trip to the emergency room or proclivity of a kid toward an expensive hobby can sink a couple that had been financially independent before having kids. It costs the average middle-income family $234,900 to raise a kid from birth to age 18 in current dollars, says the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's up 23% from what a family spent to raise a kid in 1960, adjusting for inflation.
How would you define your parents' saving and spending habits?
I would say my parents are very careful with money. They're very frugal, but I wouldn't say they're miserly. They're not, you know, they don't. They spend when they need to spend, and they don't spend frivolously.
Okay,
My parents are sound financial managers.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask that is because it's so important how our parents handle money, because they are the ones that set the example for the children. And if you do come from a background where the parents were very responsible, made wise decisions, it's obviously more likely that the children will also do the same, as opposed to families where maybe one or both of the parents are irresponsible with money, then there is a tendency then the children grow up without really understanding the value of money and how to properly plan.
Yeah, what's interesting for me is my parents were very careful with money. I mean, my father is a pastor, so growing up we didn't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
So they were very careful with the way they spent. And I kind of, for a time, went the opposite. I, you know, kind of rebelled against that. And I was spending frivolously and just spending money and just buying things I didn't need or really even want sometimes. And just because I, for some reason, felt like I didn't have enough, you know.
Right.
And so I went the opposite. But I had to come back from that.
I think that's true. The hard thing is probably passing financial skills from one generation to the next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, the old adage about three generations, right?
Mm-hmm.
First generation makes the money, second manages it, third spends it, right?
Yeah.
And then you're all left with nothing for the fourth generation.
Well, things do cycle. They do cycle around.
Yeah.
You make a really good point, because while there might be a generation that is enjoying financial success at this time, that doesn't guarantee that will continue two or three generations down the line. And I think we've all seen examples of that, of families that did have money. I can think of a very clear example here in Taipei that where I've seen the parents, the father was successful and then passed it on to the children, the couple of sons that were really didn't know, learn much about it, and it's all pretty much gone.
Right.
So, and likewise, you can come from a poor background, and then you can see people that work really hard, and they're very diligent about things. Mm-hmm. They can be very successful.
Right. I think the key is definitely teaching the next generation on how to not only manage what they've been given, but to make more money for themselves, too.
Yeah. So it's important for parents to remember, your children are watching. They watch everything, and of course, they're going to learn from you lessons on money. So if they see you spending money extravagantly on things that you don't need, well, they'll think, well, that's okay. Or if they see you making good, wise decisions and explaining things, they also will find out, well, that's the way to go. What does our deck say, Campbell?
Well, it says it's never too early to prepare financially for your family. And this goes back to what Simon was saying. The earlier, the better. The earlier you start planning, the better.
Yeah. And that can even take place even before you are married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you might be dating. You might not even have met that person yet. You can actually start planning, start putting away money, investing a little bit of money. Simon, you were talking about guys in a grocery store, 15 years old.
Yeah, when I worked in a grocery store, there were guys who were sort of putting away money for retirement and sort of had financial plan stuff. And I think that's, you know, we've been talking about kids watching their parents.
Yeah.
I think one of the things we often overlook is that financial planning isn't just something you watch and then duplicate. there's actually sort of a lot of kind of knowledge and mm-hmm. sort of skill and strategy stuff involved. We get into that a little bit in this article, actually.
Sure.
Different kind of tricks people need to actively do in order to make it work out.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about these guys putting away $50 a month. Just even starting that process at age 15 would force them to all of a sudden start to understand stock reports, financial charts, investment portfolios, just even though it's not much money, at least it forced them to start to understand reports and things.
Well, that's right. And the thing is, when they put it away at that age, it has time to grow over time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't start saving until you're, you know, 40 or 50 or whatever, you have to save a lot more. It's a big life change just to sort of get to the same place.
Okay.
And I think what you're saying about financial literacy is very important.
Yeah, good point, Campbell. I like that, financial literacy. So ask yourself, am I financially literate? Understanding this whole deal. And speaking of planning for children, that's how we start.
That's right. It says, planning for a child is a financial mind bender because there are so many unknowns. When we're talking about a mind bender, we're talking about something that makes you have to think. It's not something that is easily understood right away.
Okay. All right. You know, something that really tests us, often confuses us. Because there are so many unknowns, ranging from...
Well, that's the thing. You don't know what's going to happen with kids, right? Here they give us a list. Baby's health. Maybe there will be problems with that sort of thing or expenses associated with it. Future needs and interests that the child might develop later in life.
Mm-hmm.
They also talk about here this great word, proclivity. The proclivity of a kid towards an expensive hobby. Proclivity just means like a very strong interest in a mm-hmm. desire to do something. And so I think a lot of parents here in Taipei will be very familiar with expensive hobbies that their children might have.
All right. Well, first, there's a lot there. And the first thing I want to get into is this thing as far as the baby's health and their future needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask Campbell about this because Campbell does have firsthand experience with all of this and just what an impact that can have on a family.
Well, I mean, you know, when you have a kid, when you first get pregnant, you think everything's going to be normal and you don't really expect for anything to happen out of the ordinary. But, you know, anything could happen. Like for us, we didn't know our baby was going to be born 3 months premature,
right.
3 months early. And because of that, now she has to go to doctors a lot and she mm-hmm. needs to have therapy and she needs to get, you know, certain shoes and different things like that. So, you know, a lot of times having kids, you don't know. And I mean, you can have a perfectly healthy kid at birth, but then later on they develop some illness or they just have a terrible accident or they fall off their bike. And there's
right.
these things that you can't plan for.
Right. And things do happen, unexpected things. And whether it's a health issue or even an accident, one thing that points to is that prior to having children, that you avoid committing to large, huge debt, whether it's buying a house that is way beyond your means or if it is buying a vehicle that is way beyond your means. So that you're so stretched. A lot of times what people do is they take their income and they say, oh, we can do this. And it's a lot of it is a reach when it comes to house and car. But then what happens when emergencies or the unexpected strike, they're not prepared for it and it becomes a financial disaster. Now, you talked about this proclivity of a kid towards an expensive hobby. Give me an example.
Oh, you know, I know kids, you know, who have expensive violins and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've got the kid, so you need to get a piano so the kid can practice for piano class and they go to their tennis lessons and they have all of these different things that kids are doing, right?
Right.
All of that costs money.
In America, kids are so into sports. It's so mm-hmm. expensive. I know mm-hmm. some families, the kids grow up, they want to play ice hockey. Well, participating on an ice hockey team is expensive. You get all this equipment to buy.
Yeah.
The parents are spending thousands of dollars on the equipment and the league and the team and the traveling and everything. And you don't even think about this when you're a single guy.
Right. Yeah, you don't think, you know, well, I mean, when you're a kid and you have these hobbies, you don't think, well, you know, where is this equipment coming from? Mom and dad just buys it for you, right?
Right. Just appears. All right. Yeah. Now, we get into overall long-term costs in that next paragraph, and it's a beauty.
That's right. Parents don't just have to deal with emergency situations. The cost of having a kid itself is actually very, very high. It says here in our article, the average middle-income family will spend about $234,900, that's U.S. dollars, to raise a kid from birth to age 18.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've even heard higher figures, of course, if you throw in college, which parents are also assuming the responsibility for. Mm-hmm. You're looking at least somewhere between $300,000 to $350,000.
Right, right. Yeah. And there's a couple of things here. I mean, this is, again, a kid. So this is not the cost of raising kids. This is per child in your family. Mm-hmm. $234,900. These are talking about clothes and food and medical expenses and hobbies and you know, all these different things that come with having a kid. And this is from birth to age 18. But in current society, I know a lot of parents who are supporting their children way beyond that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, way beyond that. So, all right. Now, what does that mean on an annual basis? You're looking – we're looking somewhere around $15,000 a year. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't really think of it in those terms, either prior to having the child or even while they're doing it. But you're looking at a cost of about $15,000 a year. Not cheap.
Per kid.
Per kid. And how does that compare to 50, 60 years ago?
I actually thought this statistic was really interesting. It says it's up 23% from what a family spent to raise a kid in 1960, and that's after adjusting for inflation. So
right.
Maybe my dad was telling the truth when he said that his life was much harder than mine and he had to walk uphill both ways going to school.
In the winter, in a foot, 2 or 3 feet of snow.
Clearly, childhood
was
cheaper.
Well, I mean, it makes sense now. I mean, you've got, you know, kids nowadays, they have cell phones and iPads and all these things that, you know, computers that they didn't have.
Yeah. And so we're even spending more on kids, right, because of the equipment. There's other demands that they have, certain schools, certain things that they – there's just more stuff.
Right.
And things have gotten more expensive.
Well, it's interesting. I wonder how much of that is because of peer pressure that parents face.
Mm.
You know, just kind of competing with the neighbors to up the quality of life for your children.
Just think of clothes. My guess is that clothing, you know, that expense has gone up also compared to then. So to be stylish, for the kid to be stylish.
Sure. I mean, back then, I mean, a lot of clothes were made at home, guessing, right? I wasn't alive back then.
Well, yeah, you know, made at home or just maybe much simpler. So, okay, let's have our second reading for today.
Financial planners urge couples approaching this stage of their lives to reconsider lifestyle. One of the first decisions couples must make is how they're going to reconfigure their lives and schedules to accommodate the new arrival. The first big decision to force the issue is whether both parents will return to work or if one will stay home to provide care, said Rita Chung, a financial advisor based in Maryland. Prospective parents should look at their expenses and how much they earn based on one and two incomes and try to figure out which option makes the most sense, Chung said. Be careful, though. Some parents don't realize that most daycare centers and schools close earlier than work hours and charge extra for extended hours care, Chung said.
Okay, one of the first things new couples, parents have to do is reconsider their lifestyle. Take a look at what they're doing on a daily basis and make changes. So, and how do we start here?
Well, they tell us couples basically have to make decisions. And the first one is how they're going to reconfigure or change their lives and schedules to accommodate the new arrival. New arrival, of course, is the child.
Yeah. All right. And the first big decision?
Yep. The first big decision to force the issue is whether both parents will return to work or if one will stay home to provide care. So, yeah, I mean, this is a big change. I mean, when you have a kid, your lives are not your own. Scheduling becomes very important, and I didn't realize this before I had a kid, but pretty much, you know, our lives revolve around our daughter's schedule. She needs a nap. She needs to be home so we can't be out, you know, things like that. And then here we're talking about whether both will go back to work and you're going to find someone else to care for the child, or one of them will stay home and take care of the child.
Now, do you think this is an America-specific sort of issue here? Most people I know in Taipei go back to work sort of after they have the baby.
It does seem to me at a higher rate here in Taipei that both parents will work. The mother will return to work shortly after giving birth at a higher percentage than they do in America.
I think so. I mean, I think part of that is also just because a lot of people in Taipei live with their in-laws or they live with their parents. And so they do have, quote unquote, free childcare. I personally, I feel that, you know, it's important for parents to be there for their children and to at least one of them to be full-time to take care of the child, at least for the first few years, because it really makes a difference in the child's life.
Yeah, and in fact, I know that you and Linda are dealing with it that way. Linda has chosen to stay home and not work.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for us, it's the best decision because – and I've seen a big difference in just that the fact that our daughter seems more secure. She seems more, you know, confident and very outgoing and just – and she just feels – I just sense that she developmentally just feels more taken care of.
Yeah. And there's also many studies have shown that the first 2 years are key in the development of not only the personality and the character traits but also the relationship with both parents.
Right.
And those first 2 years actually lay the groundwork for the rest of the life as far as – the type of relationship that parent and child may have.
Right, yeah. So I think a lot of times parents, you know, when the kids grow older, they wonder, well, why, you know, why don't I have this relationship with my kid? Well, look back to, you know, the first few years. And I mean, there's no judgment here because each family needs to make their own decisions what's best for them.
Yeah. All right. And that's we get into some of that in the next paragraph.
That's right. In the next paragraph, they start talking about basically the problem of schools or childcare. And the reason this is a problem is because it's so expensive that, you know, having a child in childcare or, say, a kindergarten so that you can go back to work might actually, you know, burn off all of the income you're earning and more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point, Simon, because as we see here in the second part of this paragraph, some parents don't realize most daycare centers and schools close earlier than their work hours, charge extra for extended hours care. And really what we're talking about here is the extra income that the mother might be generating versus the cost of the daycare and then also any extra costs. You might actually not be getting ahead or maybe only a little bit.
Right. So is it worth it? Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to decide, is this worth it? What is the trade-off? All right. Let's have our last reading for today.
Build a cash cushion. It's prudent for anyone to have enough cash in the bank to hold them over for 3 to 6 months. But given the tremendous unpredictability of children, the importance of a cash cushion is magnified, said Laura McMahon, a financial planner. It's not unheard of for parents to have more than 6 months of cash, just in case something unexpected happens. Waiting too long to create a rainy day fund might leave families exposed.
Build a cash cushion.
Yes, building a cash cushion is very important. It says it's prudent for anyone to have enough cash in the bank to hold them over for 3 to 6 months. So here we're not just talking about parents and young children. We're talking about everyone, anyone in this world who's alive, got a job. It's good to have a cash cushion.
Okay, prudent, wise, practical. Hold somebody over. Hold them over. What's that mean?
Well, the idea is if you don't have money, you have this extra bit of savings that has enough money to last you through the difficult period. That's what holdover means, last you through a difficult period.
Yeah, and it's important enough for me, somebody who's single and I don't have any children, to do this. But given the tremendous unpredictability of children, it's even more important
That's right. It says the importance of a cash cushion is magnified. Now, when something is magnified, it's made bigger. It's made even more important.
Yeah. All right. Now, what about as far as a time frame, Simon?
Well, they're saying initially they say here it's normal for people to have 3 to 6 months. They're saying for parents, it's good to have more than 6 months cash. And I think that is this is a good example of one of those bits of technical financial planning knowledge we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. You might know that your parents have savings when you're growing up. You might know that they save every month. But you won't necessarily know that they've designated sort of an emergency fund and under which sort of situations they would use that money.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I mean, just for example, so, you know, something happens with your kid, you need to take time off of work. Your boss isn't necessarily going to give you salary, so what are you going to do? You know, if you can have this 3 to 6 months worth of income saved up, then you're okay.
And I think the main thing this actually helps people avoid is going to credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, credit cards, you pay a lot of interest. If people don't have sort of savings and they face an unforeseen expense or an emergency, they'll put it on the credit card, right? And then they have to try to pay that off over the coming months.
Right. And it becomes too much because of the interest rate. In line 16, we say it's not unheard of for parents to have more than 6 months of cash. Just that means it's not unheard of means it's not unusual. And then there in line 19, we say waiting too long to create what, Campbell?
It says waiting too long to create a rainy day fund might leave families exposed. So when we're talking about a rainy day fund, we're talking about an amount of money saved and that you're going to use only when something bad happens.
Yeah, this expression actually comes from that expression, saving for a rainy day, right? If you ask someone, why are you saving your money? They might not really have a reason, and so they would use this expression, I'm saving for a rainy day, which means saving when I need it, when times are tougher.
Yeah, when the weather's bad. Life is okay and easy when it's nice and sunny, but when it's rainy and storming, we have to deal with that. And actually, if you can do that, it will prevent you from being exposed, which Simon was talking about, those emergencies then when families don't have enough cash, they don't have that rainy day fund, they end up putting things on a credit card, and then that creates a huge problem. All right, listeners, thanks for being here for day one of Sound Financial Planning. Lots to talk about. Come on back tomorrow. We'll see you then.